Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to take a look at a number of aches and pains, but zero in a little bit on neck pain and whiplash today and what to do if you have it. Guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, great to have you back.
Good to be here on another beautiful Wisconsin day, but kind of a sad game on Saturday. A great yes. game, but a sad outcome.
Yes. Sad outcome.
Yeah.
Jill Tyne Nissenbaum with us as well, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at the UW-Madison. And Jill, great to have you here.
Great to be here. And also, the Packers lost yesterday, too.
I know.
So
it's
like
a double whammy.
It was a rough weekend for bookends, football fans.
Bad news bookends.
A lot of aches and pains.
That's oh, right. yeah.
And
that's
those
right,
two
yeah.
bunches.
Many of which we can't solve.
Right.
Well, no. But there may be some help from those who have suffered from neck pain or whiplash. If you've had that kind of an issue, or others as well, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Jill, you alerted us to the fact that the most recent Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy just did a special issue on neck pain and whiplash associated disorders. And you know, you hear that term all the time.
Right.
But what exactly is whiplash?
So that's a great question. So we typically think of a whiplash injury as an individual who's sitting in their car and they sustain a rear-end collision. So they're rear-ended from behind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little redundant,
yeah.
but that's what happens.
Rear-ended from behind, rear-ended yes, from behind. Indeed.
And what happens is your body actually kind of slides forward, and so you have this kind of relative posterior movement of the head. And then the head ends up going forward and backward before you usually come to some sort of stop, whether it's because you hit an airbag or whatever. And so there's many people who end up with kind of chronic neck pain from these rear-end collisions. And, of course, it can happen with a side collision, a front collision, but typically we think about it happening from a rear-end collision.
And so men and women as equally likely to be affected?
You know, interestingly, there's a lot more research showing that females have a tendency to end up with more chronic neck pain. And there's been a lot of wonderful research that actually has come out of Milwaukee looking at why this is so. And women have a tendency to have longer necks and thinner necks.
Yeah.
And you think, well, we don't have the muscle mass to hold up our head, but our heads are smaller, so doesn't it all work out in the wash? And that is indeed not the case. The other issue is car seats and head restraints are not a one-size-fits-all. They're kind of meant to fit the average person. So if you have a smaller woman or a smaller framed woman, her head isn't going to hit that head restraint appropriately, and they're going to be a little bit more prone to a whiplash injury.
And even small men, mm-hmm. you know, you might think, well, small men will have the same risk factors because they're smaller. But actually, the physical structure of the cervical spine is different in men. And so the kinematics of when they get hit, they are less likely to sustain a whiplash injury than the same size female.
And the other thing that's really kind of been shed to light as of late is the association between a whiplash and concussion. So we always think of concussion as being just sports related. But there's been research that shows that the velocity with which your head can move when you sustain a whiplash injury is very similar to the velocity a football player's head moves through when he sustains a concussion.
And that may explain some of the symptoms, such as dizziness
right.
and loss of memory, that happens after a whiplash.
So is it then a form of concussion, or could be, or is it?
What's probably happening is they not only have a neck pathology or neck injury, they have a concussion on top of it. And I think everybody gets so focused on the neck that we don't always treat the concussion. And on the other side of the coin, I think when an athlete sustains a concussion, realistically, if they've gotten hit that hard that they have a concussion, they've probably sustained some form of a whiplash injury to their neck.
Yeah.
And so we need to look at kind of both sides of the coin in these populations.
So in terms of treating or what,
right.
you know.
Yeah, well, we're having another issue. We were just talking about this. There's going to be another issue that comes out early in 2017 that will be more focused on the interventions. But trying to intervene early to get a handle on the pain, on the biomechanics, and those things of this to prevent it from becoming chronic. Fully 50% of cases become chronic and linger longer than 3 months. If they linger longer than 3 months, the chances of resolution drop significantly. So we really want to get at these people early on and get them on a strengthening program, a mobility program, a pain control program, etc.
There was a question from a listener, and I'm trying to remember, of facial therapy?
Of myofascial therapy. There was a caller who had called in or had a question from last month about different benefits of myofascial therapy. So myofascial pain is, well, first of all, the fascia is kind of wraps around your muscles, and you can get not only muscle pain, but you can get what's called myofascial pain. And this can be treated with soft tissue mobilization, massage, things like that. And it can be very, very beneficial, especially for, she had a question about low back and hip, and I do believe myofascial treatment is very effective in this area.
Right, exactly. So it isn't always about the structure of the spine or the bones and joints, but sometimes it's the muscles and other connective tissues that are working really hard to support the spinal structure. So if there's some pathology in the spine, then the muscles often have to work overtime to control and stabilize and do some of the work of the static structures itself. So you get tightness, you get pain, you get those knots. And so some myofascial therapy, which usually involves some deep tissue, some trigger point, a variety of different techniques depending upon the individual, can be very helpful in maintaining sort of the homeostasis or the mobility of all that connective tissue.
And wouldn't relate to whiplash or any.
Oh, certainly.
It could. Yeah. Absolutely could.
Yeah, because all those connective tissues, the muscles, the fascia, all that get stretched, particularly when those muscles kick in to decelerate the head as it's moving forward and backward, the muscles are trying to stabilize so that the head doesn't get whipped back and forth, so to speak. A person who called last month was wondering about getting treatment in their home for that. There are certainly physical therapists who do home visits, and you could find somebody who does that, and you would likely want to negotiate some sort of cash price for that. Otherwise, many massage therapists are very skilled in this kind of intervention, and I'm sure many of them would come to your home if that was the case.
Right.
Okay, excellent. Well, we have, I'm surprised we haven't had anybody phone in yet with that kind of a problem, but let's go. We've got plenty of problems to deal
with. There's always enough problems to go around.
we'll come and go with whiplash here a little bit. Randy in Eau Claire, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have symmetrical pain in both shoulder joints. It's been chronic. I am seeing a doctor for an unrelated problem in a week, but I'm just wondering if you have any insight about what might cause something like that. I didn't injure myself.
Well, how long has it been going on?
Well, it's been probably a couple of months that I've just kind of played through it. And
well, can you played what? Are you playing a sport? Golf,
no,
tennis?
When I say played through it, I just meant I just was kinda tolerating
through it.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Carrying on.
So you just woke up one day with pain in your shoulders?
Yeah.
Okay. Numbness or tingling anywhere?
No, just pain, and it's definitely more acute in the morning.
Okay, and is it there all the time, or is it only with certain positions and movements?
No, it's there all the time.
Does it feel better when you lie down?
Not particularly.
Oh. Okay. You need to see your doctor.
Mm-hmm. You definitely need to bring
that
up.
Because a garden variety musculoskeletal problem, as in rotator cuff tendonitis or biceps tendonitis or any of those itises around your shoulders, are increased with activity and use, and they're decreased with rest. So if you're not getting relief when you're lying down, then you need to start looking elsewhere as the source of the symptoms. It's possible it could be referred from your neck. Whenever you have problems in both sides, we start looking more central. So it could be a neck issue. So I would see your doctor and be sure to mention this. I would probably move this up on my priority list and make sure that your physician does not just dismiss this as rotator cuff tendonitis, which is sort of the garbage basket term for all shoulder pain that's unexplained. But make sure that you get a close look to see if you can really find the source for this problem.
Right, and especially in your cervical spine.
Yep, yep. And let us know how you turn out.
Yeah, we'd love to hear back from you. Thanks a lot, Randy, for calling. Appreciate it. Michael in Appleton up next. Michael, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Larry. Hope you're having a good day. I'm calling. I've had pain in my just my left knee for going on about 8 months now, and it's kind of in the main body of the knee. I put it off for a little while, and then I ended up seeing my primary care physician, who, quote, said, "Well, you're too young for arthritis," sent me for x-rays, and then I came back and he said, "Well, you have arthritis." So he recommended I ice it and take ibuprofen for 4 weeks, and I did. And there was some very mild improvement. So then he sent me to physical therapy, and I did that for 5 weeks, which I felt helped some. But then I went and saw an orthopedic surgeon, and I just had an MRI last week, which came back normal. Which is great in that I don't have to have surgery, but less great in that
right.
I still have mm-hmm. pain in my knee.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah,
so he recommended more physical therapy, which I'm definitely open to. But I was just wondering if I listen to the show regularly and hear the segment, so I was wondering if the guests had anything to add or any insight.
Sure. Do you remember injuring your knee in any way at all, Mike?
No, and that's another thing. I was telling the woman I talked to earlier, I lift weights regularly about 4 or 5 times a week, but I didn't injure it or tweak it or do anything in particular. However, for about a month and a half prior to sort of the main onset of the pain, I kind of went on a squat kick.
Oh,
and
oh
was doing
yeah.
squats. every day for about a month and a half. Yeah. Not like super heavyweight, but I was just doing a plate on each side. And I've been avoiding doing squats or pretty much any leg exercise since then, since I saw my doctor. But I'm still getting the pain. And I'm a full-time student, a dad, and then I also bartend in the evenings about 3-4 times a week.
So you're on your feet a lot. I mean, that's,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that's hard too.
So may I ask how old you are? You said you were too young for arthritis.
I'm 28.
Oh, yeah. But he said you had arthritis, and how... I mean, but the MRI was normal. They didn't show any signs of...
The MRI was normal. They showed that structurally everything is fine. Tendons and all ligaments are all good. The initial x-ray is what showed some arthritis. What my physical therapist said, she basically said, I played soccer about 6 through 18, but then since then I've mostly just done weightlifting. And from what I was telling her, she said that pretty much all the exercises I do for legs are in either the up-down or forward-back.
Oh,
kind of
so you need
plane.
To add front yep. to plane. You need to
yeah,
add some,
so
yes.
Been, she gave me some exercises and stretches, which I did to try to strengthen, you know, my hips and sort of the lateral
yep.
muscles.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so I've been working on that. But.
Yeah, it sounds like you're on the right track. You know, if you were doing a lot of squatting, it may have been kind of a kneecap issue.
Correct. That's what.
That it's really hard to pick up on an MRI or even on a radiograph. I mean, maybe have a little scuffing underneath there. But it can be fairly painful, particularly after you've been sitting for long periods of time or...
Going downstairs.
Or going downstairs, yeah, et cetera. So,
the main thing for me that really made me go to the doctor was it started... I would kneel on a hard surface initially. It was just unbearably painful. But then it progressed to the point where even if I would kneel on my bed, it got that same sort of reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was kind of told my scapula was grating on my femur.
Patella.
Oh, your patella.
Your patella.
Yeah.
Or my patella, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Not my
yeah.
Femur.
That's okay. Yeah, and that's kind of what we were
exactly.
speculating. So that's kind of a takes a long time to get that better. So I'd say if you stick with it, you should get better and stop doing things that annoy your kneecap.
Right.
Yeah, there
exactly.
we go. Good yeah. luck. Thank you so much for calling. Doug and Wilmot up next. Hi, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Hey, I don't have a question. I called last month. I had a problem. Your two guests, I don't remember your names.
Lori and Jill.
I told you my
Our mother doesn't angel. Remember either.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So I called in. I said, my problem, I got a pain between my shoulder blade and my spine. And my left arm got weak. My tricep basically kind of failed. I was waiting. I called you guys about 2 weeks after it happened. I was hoping it would go away. You guys kind of laughed. And you guys said, and he says, no, don't go. I asked you to go to physical therapy. Go to. This guy said, no. Go to the doctor. Get to the doctor. Well, I waited one more day hoping he'd get better. I didn't. And 9 days later, they did a surgery in the back of my neck, and they said, it's a good thing you got in here. There was a C6, C7 that made my tricep pretty much fail.
Right.
I ruptured a disc, just like you guys said. And then my C5, C6, he says, that looks like a mess. My wrist was a little weak. My arms are tingly.
Oh, geez.
They took that one out. So I'd have done it anyway. I didn't call with a question. I called with kudos to the both of you. You pushed me to get to the doctor. And, Larry, you told me to call back, so I did. I let you out.
Thank you.
That's so good. It was excellent.
And, kudos to all of you, and you too, Larry, and WPR for having shows like this.
So now make sure.
Help me out.
Now make sure that you still, after, now that you're post-surgical, you'll still need to do good rehab and get those muscles strong.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was also surprised that they said, that the office I'm dealing with, it says you don't have to go to physical therapy. We'll tell you what to do. I'm 3 weeks out. I'm only limited for 10 pounds. Do the neck left and right for, like, saying no, up and down for saying yes, shoulder shrugs, the warm thing on my back, stay busy, cardio. And it said in about another month, I see him again. It says, do you have a membership to a gym? And so it's kind of nice that I didn't have to I have to go to physical therapy. Well, too bad for you guys. But it's kind of, I guess it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you have the skill set to get better on your own and stay outside the medical system, that means there's more healthcare dollars available for the rest of the people who need it. So so I'd say carry on. Yeah. But if you run into trouble, then you go back and see the physical therapist, and they will help get you straight back on the right path again.
Doug, thank you.
Yeah. Good for him.
I'm feeling good. Thank
All right. Excellent, Doug. Thanks for calling.
I wish my children listened to that one.
I know. Maybe we should tape it and play it back to them.
Oh, boy. Well, Gene in Sun Prairie has a question, a comment. Hi.
Hi. I've got several issues going on, if you have time. I did have a very minor whiplash accident like 35 years ago, and it wasn't until I read a book years later that it dawned on me I started having migraines at work shortly after that. Then I developed fibromyalgia 20 years ago. Until recently, I was going to the gym every day and doing things like power yoga and weight machines. Yet, when my fibromyalgia flared up last month, my physical therapist will say, oh, your muscles are weak and you need to strengthen them, which can be aggravating them. And I always go back and forth as to how to handle that. You know, the famous Travell and Simon, she'd say you can't strengthen the muscle that's full of trigger points.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah. Nor can you strengthen a muscle you're not recruiting. But
right.
So you've been going to the gym and doing yoga and weights. How long have you done that?
Yoga for 15 years, and I added the weights.
Okay.
Early spring.
Okay, but then you stopped when you had a fibromyalgia flare. Is that right?
I was also been having hip and leg pain.
Okay.
That has been coming and going for the last 10 years.
Okay.
Which I think massage therapist has kind of gets past that blind man and the elephant. You know, I go chiropractor treats one spot, physical therapist looks at another.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. Exactly.
Really bad knots in my side, the quad muscle.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I hear that you have a lot of things going on. I'm really pleased that you took the initiative to go to the gym, mm-hmm. to do the yoga, to do the weights, because that's what will sustain you in the long run. If you give up the exercise, it's just going to be a downward spiral. So the purpose of the physical therapist, the chiropractor, the massage therapist are all sort of what I would consider ancillary services to help you be able to do those other things, to help you be able to do the yoga, to go to the gym. So maybe you need to see the massage therapist to take care of the knots when you have a flare. Maybe you need to see the physical therapist who can retool and restructure your program a little bit to help get you back on the track of getting back to the gym and getting back to yoga. Maybe you need to see the chiropractor for an adjustment so that your hip doesn't hurt when you go to the gym, whatever. But we're all here to help keep you in the exercise game.
Right, and it might be that a few modification or changes in some of the yoga poses or how you're doing the weightlifting might be all you need to do to kind of stay at a more of an even level and mm-hmm. kind of avoid a flare-up.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like you're doing the right things.
Absolutely.
To help keep yourself healthy across, you know, your lifespan, which is really, really important for you. And, you know, everyone I know who I've seen who has fibromyalgia, they have these dips. They mm-hmm. have these setbacks, whether it's weather-related or stress-related or increased activity-related. Mm. And then we see them for a few visits, kind of work through, you know, what caused the setback, how to help get them back on track, give them some specific exercises that they need that they might not have been doing, and try to get them back on their regimen.
Yeah. And good luck to you. And thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much.
Yeah. She just shows how, you know, people with fibromyalgia and these other chronic conditions can continue to exercise and stay healthy.
Right.
Sometimes with a little help from their medical friends.
Right. She's not giving up, which is yep. fabulous.
Susan in Madison called in to say she is 4'11" and headrests in cars really don't work for her. Where should the bump on the headrest be placed?
It's supposed to be in the middle of your head, which it probably mm-hmm. doesn't match for her at
right.
all.
She may need a booster seat.
Yeah. So this is the exact thing we're talking mm-hmm. about is manufacturers make this seat to fit 95% of the bell curve. Mm-hmm. And so there's that 5% on either end that don't fit, and she would be a classic case where she's probably going to have a mismatch.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you can get a little boost for under there, a little wedge or something
yeah.
to sit her up a little higher.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the whole proportion issue where the
right.
proportion of the seat and the lumbar doesn't hit her in the right,
right.
place anymore and so on. So, you know, it kind of depends upon where she puts
her
risk.
And where her height
yeah.
is, yeah.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I had a friend who was had a particular car in mind that she was going to buy, and in the end she didn't buy it because the headrest
yeah.
didn't
you know,
fit.
I think it's fabulous that people are aware of it because I never, if I drive my husband's car, I adjust the rear view mirrors, I adjust the seat forward and back, and I'm very negligent about
yeah.
adjusting the headrest. And it's so very important
yeah.
that people take the time to adjust their headrest and make
yeah.
sure that they're fitted appropriately.
Yep.
Well, let's turn to Peter in Madison next. Peter, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing, what's on your mind?
I have a swollen bursa on my left leg. On my knee, and it's been this way for about the last year. I used to run about 20 miles to 25 miles a week up until about 18 months ago when I had this swollen bursa. Well, out working in the yard one day, I got tripped up in a tarp, and I fell right on the bursa on my knee, and it went like squish.
Oh, boy.
So I've been to the doctor, and I have absolutely no discomfort with this whatsoever, other than it looks like I've got a half of a golf ball buried in my knee.
Right, yeah. right. Right on yeah. top of, is it right on top of your kneecap?
No, if you're looking at the knee, it's at about the 4 or 5 o'clock position.
Hmm.
Okay.
Below the kneecap.
Okay. All right.
And I was told, you know, I should wear an ace bandage. Well, I did that initially, but over a period of time, I've gotten away from the ace bandage because it's such a hassle.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not making a difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's,
so what
yeah.
do we do here?
Well, typically you irritate, I mean, bursas are there to kind of absorb shock, and you get they get inflamed when something's rubbing against it. And there are probably about 14 bursa around the knee.
Right, right. There's a lot of them. So does it aggravate you? Does it bother you, or is it just cosmetic?
It's probably more cosmetic than it is anything else. I have a little bit of discomfort on a scale of 1 to 10. I'd say it might be a 1 or a 2. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would just go about my business.
Right.
You know, they can drain them, but the risk of infection is fairly high. You really don't want to go messing with them, and sometimes it just comes back.
The doctor did indicate that. He did not want to drain it unless it happened after.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, agreed.
Exactly.
So we're on the same page with that. So I would just go about my business and...
Look forward to winter when you could wear pants.
There you go.
If you have to kneel, you can make yourself a little donut pad.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the ACE bandage is it compresses everything.
Right.
It compresses your kneecap and all kinds of stuff. Ideally, if it was annoying, you would make a donut pad and you would get, you know, some foam. You can get them at a drugstore, and you would cut out a circle that was probably twice the diameter of the... golf ball bursa, and then you would cut a hole out in the middle that goes over the top of the bursa. Then if you put a wrap or something around it, it takes the pressure right off the bursa and it doesn't annoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thanks so much for calling. Jill Tine Nissenbaum, Lori Tine Brody, our guest today on physical therapy here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can take an in-depth look at Wisconsin's political scene with the new WPR Politics Podcast. John K. Wilson hosts Capital Reporting Team Sean Johnson and Laurel White for a lively roundtable on the latest in Badger State politics. Subscribe or listen at WPR.org/politics. And if you've got a physical therapy issue, you've come to the right place, because Lori Tine Brody and Jill Tine Nissenbaum with us from the University of Wisconsin. Lori with the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, where she's an associate professor. Join in. Give us an email at talk@WPR.org. You can phone us at 1-800-642-1234 or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Jim and Stevens Point up next. Jim, hello.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm like one of your earlier callers. I called last month. I have a stress back fracture in my foot, and I've been in a boot since then and just saw the doctor, and she said that it's healed, and in a week I can take off my boot, and now I can actually bear weight. So thanks for your comments last time. I have two questions about it. One is, once I get my boot off, is there anything you would suggest in terms of my recovering and having the foot work properly? And then the other question is, do I think about it becoming fractured again, or does it heal up pretty solidly? And I'll just listen. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling.
Well, those are great questions. And I my first suggestion is, once you get out of your boot in about a week, you'll have to transition to shoes, and that will change how you load your foot.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to want to take that boot off on Monday and go run 6 miles on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. That would be a bad choice.
Right. What kind of activities are you going back to?
I do a lot of swimming. I do dog walking. And if there's any biking time left, I would like to.
Oh, all right.
Those are great things.
Perfect. Because none of them overload your foot too much. So swimming, fabulous. Biking, fabulous. Walking the dog, good. You know.
The one thing I would suggest, though, is maybe one or two visits with a physical therapist, because you need to strengthen the intrinsic muscles of your foot, and there's some very specific exercises to do that. And then the other thing is, I always like to throw in a little bit of balance, because mm-hmm. you kind of lose that proprioceptive awareness in your feet, and a couple balance exercises would probably be good for mm-hmm. Jim. Keep him active.
Yep.
All right. Good luck, Jim.
What about my second question about does it heal solidly? Or do I have to worry about it refracturing?
So where in your foot was the fracture?
It's fractured right where the base of your little toe meets
the base of the fifth metatarsal. Did they say it was a base of the, was it an avulsion fracture? They didn't call it a Jones fracture, did they?
They didn't, although I read about that after I talked to you guys last time. But no, she didn't.
Good.
She didn't say it was.
Okay, good. Because you can fracture in a couple different areas there, and the blood supply in one area is much better than the other. So as long as they weren't concerned that it was a Jones fracture, you should be okay. It's still important that you do weight-bearing activity to maintain your bone mineral density and maintain that, but you're probably not at a risk of a refracture.
Do you know why you fractured it in the first place?
Well, I was doing a lot of walking on a trip to Alaska, and I jumped off of a boat, and I kind of think that's where I might have done it.
Okay, all right, So there was a known cause, so it wasn't.
Yeah, well,
okay.
I think so. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
All right, yes. Well, then don't do that again.
There you go. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Jared in Stoughton up next. Hi, Jared.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call today.
Sure.
Well, I've had elbow pain for about better than a month now. And what it is when I reach up for something, like something heavy, like, say, a gallon of milk and grasp it, that's when I get a sharp pain right centrally located in my elbow. And the pain kind of goes down my forearm, the top of my forearm. Normal bending it, there is some discomfort if it's kind of, if you're sitting with your arms crouched or bent, it takes some pain to get my arm back unbent.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know if I need to see my doctor. I've been told that this is probably tennis elbow. I need to rest, but reason I don't really want to go to see my doctor is that my insurance isn't so great, and I'm kind of trying to avoid that if I can.
Sure.
What kind of work do you do, Jared?
Well, I've been in sports all my life. I was in construction, and now I own a motorcycle business where I do a lot of wrenching.
Oh. Okay.
Well, yeah, because we want to try to figure out why you have it. So we could give you lots of things to do, but then if you go to work and you're abusing it for hours and hours, whatever we tell you, I mean, to rest it, it's
right,
going to be spitting in the wind.
Work is not resting it for you. That's
the
problem.
I'm really trying not to use it as much as I can.
Okay. Well, what you're going to end up doing, though, Jared, is you're going to... The work has to get done. So what you end up doing is shifting that load someplace else. So you either end up with tennis elbow in your other arm, or you end up with rotator cuff tendonitis because you shift the load to your shoulder. So let's deal with the elbow.
Well, what I have in my right arm is when I say to put on a jacket and I get to that point where you're reaching up to put your arm in the sleeve.
Your shoulder.
Like the back of my tricep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So tennis elbow. The first thing is a wrist splint.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to your friendly drugstore and get a wrist splint. And you can look at them online. But basically, your fingers are all free, but the splint immobilizes your wrist, and then it goes around the base of your thumb. So your fingers are all free, but immobilizes your wrist. And so you ask, why are you immobilizing my wrist when it's my elbow? Because it is the movement of your wrist and the gripping that has to happen at your wrist. Those muscles originate at your elbow. So it's the origin of the muscles that move and stabilize your wrist.
So the other thing is, I would encourage you to sleep in your wrist splint at night. A lot of people feel like they curl their fingers up in a ball when they sleep, and that will stop you from doing that. So sleeping in a wrist splint at night is also helpful. You may find that, you know, you've probably seen those tennis elbow straps you can buy.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you the cheapest way to make one, and that way if you don't like it, you're out $2. You go to the store and you buy pre-wrap. You know what the pre-wrap is? That wrap And you wrap it around your arm, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 times, and then you roll it up, and you put it right over kind of where those muscles are sore. And the theory behind that is it kind of dissipates the forces. So I definitely agree with Lori. I go with the wrist splint first, but you can also do this as well. And the other thing is, if what you can try for a wrist splint at home is if you have rollerblade guards.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes
I do have rollerblade guards, but I do not rollerblade anymore.
Well, that's a good... So you may just want to try that. Sometimes that little immobilization will... You'll be like, oh my gosh, this is making a huge difference. I'm going to go buy myself a good wrist splint. So you can try that first.
Oh, very nice. So, and then typically, in the long term, we want to get you on an exercise program to increase the strength of the muscles that stabilize your wrist. But the problem is when you're using your wrist all day at work to try to figure out what the right dosage of the strengthening exercises is to get you better gets a little dicey, which is why we usually tell you to see a physical therapist. to deal with that. So, but you can look online. I'm sure there's a lot of videos about treating tennis elbow and the kinds of strengthening exercises. They usually involve a combination of grip, because that's why the gallon of milk hurts, is because you have to grip it and then hold it. So it's a combination of grip and then the wrist motion that overloads those muscles. So that's why you get it with your wrenching, because you're gripping the wrench and turning. The thing you could think about is changing your grip on your wrench.
Well, yeah. Or even looking to see if they have, if you do a lot of wrenching and a certain wrench size is what you use all the time, it might be worth online looking if they have ergonomic wrenches that have a wider grip.
Yeah. Well, the other thing
there are ways that I've found that if I can push a certain way, I don't feel pain.
Okay, yeah. Good. That's good.
The other thing that I've done for some people, for a variety of tools, is you get a pool noodle, that's not too thick, kind of a thin one that has the hollow down the middle, and you can cut it the length, cut a length off that you need, 3 or 4 inches, and then you slice it, or you can just, if you have a tool, you can slide it over the end, and that will increase your grip size, and you can slide it over different devices.
Yeah, so that way the grip isn't so tight.
The grip isn't so
and
tight.
More of an open grip is usually
an open
better.
Grip. Yeah.
All right, good luck.
So lastly, is this something that eventually, if it doesn't get better with what we're doing, that I would need a doctor or a surgery at some point?
Surgery is typically an absolute last resort. I would say for every 25 people, maybe 50 people I see with lateral epicondylia, maybe one goes in and has a debridement. It's for the very, very rare case. Most people get by conservatively.
Yeah, and honestly, you don't want a bunch of cortisone injections there either.
Okay.
It's just not good for that tissue. It ends up with problems in the long run.
Yeah.
Good luck, Jared. Thank you so much for calling. Jane and Taylor, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, yeah. So I have lower back pain for the last 2.5 months, and it's always after I wake up in the morning, and especially if I have to stand in one spot. Once I get going, or even if I'm sitting down, no problem, and usually by the end of the day, I have no problem. But it's really bad in the morning, particularly if I lay on my back or on my stomach, which are my favorite sleeping positions. Any idea? I do have a doctor's appointment, but it's not scheduled until mid-November, so I'm 2 weeks here. I'm kind of just paining it out.
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is your mattress.
Right.
If your mattress needs to be replaced. Sleeping on your stomach or your back, if you don't have a good supportive mattress, doesn't give your spine sufficient support. So in the absence of an injury or something that you can explain as a cause of your back pain for the last 2.5 months, unexplained pain or pain in the morning that goes away after the first 30 to 40 minutes, we usually start looking at your mattress.
Right.
Okay.
Check your tag, see when you last bought.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 8 years, I think, is the life expectancy of a mattress.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would definitely think that as well. And then if she is irritating her facets while she's sleeping, which is what I'm thinking is happening, that would bother her in standing, too, if they're already irritated. So that would kind of explain that I still have pain in standing, though.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so that would be the place to start. And then, obviously, there are a million core exercises you can do to strengthen your core if there's something that you're doing during the day that's aggravating it and it shows up in the morning.
Thanks for calling and good luck. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. We have lots of callers online, so I think we'll go right back to the phones and to Chrissy in Milwaukee. Thank you for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
The reason I'm calling today is I actually have had conflicting information on what I should do with my stomach issues. I have 3 kids, a 6-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 1-year-old with back-to-back pregnancies, with my youngest being 14 months apart. I recently have been having lower back pain, and I noticed that my abdominal separation didn't come back together after my last pregnancy. Mm. So I went to a surgeon who said that that's basically called a tummy tuck, where you'd pull the muscles back together, and that he doesn't know of any exercises that can help fix that problem that has already, the damage has more or less already been done. So I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions or recommendations on what I could do from here, and I still have my responsibilities at home where I'm constantly bending over.
Right, sure.
Right. Young kids. So just wondering what you guys thought about it.
Well, there are physical therapists who specialize in women's health, who work with women for childbirth, pelvic floor, and what you have is called a diastasis recti, where you have a separation of your abdominal muscles. We also see it in people who have abdominal obesity, and they have this split in their stomach muscles. So, you know, I would not go to surgery yet. I would see a physical therapist who specializes in women's health and get started on an exercise program. There are abdominal strengthening exercises that you can do while stabilizing your abdominal muscles. There's a variety of them that you can do. And before I ran off to surgery, I would start with strengthening the remaining core muscles and your rectus abdominis muscles and see how far you get before you do anything surgically.
Right. Can I ask how wide your diastasis is?
I would say it's about a little over three fingers.
Okay. So it's in that category of probably on the little bit on the higher end. But like Lori said, there are people who specialize in this, especially in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. There's probably women's health clinics that you could see, and they give you a lot of exercises to do at home. And so with your busy schedule with three kids, it would be hard for you to come in the clinic all the time. They could give you stuff to do at home that I think would help
you. Right, just with periodic checks. But I would not run off to surgery until I had tried this. And even if you ended up having surgery down the road, the stronger you are prior to your surgery, the better your result would be. So I would look for someone, and you can call a clinic, check with your insurance company. You want someone who's a women's health specialist, and there are certifications in women's health specialty.
Okay. One last question. So is there actually a chance that I can improve it and bring those back together, or is kind of like what the surgeon said, the damage is done and it's just a matter of improving everything in its current location?
It's a good question, and I'm not sure. Some of it depends upon your age and your ability of your connective tissue to respond to that. So your youngest child is one, so it's been a year since birth. So I don't know. It's a tough call. I don't know that anyone could say for sure, but I certainly would want to give it a try first.
I would try conservative first, and that way, like Lori said, if it does fail, you're just going to be so much further ahead of the game should surgery become your only option. So consider it either rehab or prehab.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Brian and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hi. So I've been running, and I've noticed that my left hip kind of hurts for a day, maybe two, after I get done running. I was doing some research, and it sounds like it's probably my, sorry if I butcher the name, but the tensor fascia lata.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've been doing some stretching and trying to do a little bit of strengthening and doing some other kinds of cardio. But my question is, I don't want to re-injure. How long should I stop running for? And the pain's gotten worse, and it has lasted longer than 1 or 2 days, so that's kind of why I'm just going to stop running for a while. But how long should I do that for?
Well, that's a great question. And the first thing that comes to mind is, why are you, if you're doing a symmetrical activity like running, why are you only getting this on one side? And my best guess is you probably have a little bit of hip weakness on that side. And so resting it is wonderful, but if you're not going to do exercises to kind of strengthen the muscles that the TFL has taken over for, as soon as you resume running, the problem's going to come back.
Right, exactly. And that's classically what we see people do. They say, oh, this hurts, I'm going to stop my activity. And then they feel better because they're not loading at the same intensity. When they go back to that loading, boom, they're right back where they started. So you don't want to rest without doing whatever rehab you need. So Jill's right, it could be muscle weakness. It could be a leg length difference. It could be a pelvic asymmetry. It could be something about your gait that's causing this, but she's right. If you have a symmetrical activity having pain on one side, there must be a reason for it. And if you don't find out and correct that reason when you start running, you're going to be right back where you started. So I'd suggest a visit or two to a physical therapist and have them look at you, examine your pelvis, examine your hips, examine your leg length, look at your gait. If all those other things check out, fine, and see what the reason is for your left hip hurting, and then give you the things that you need to do to get it back in shape for running, as well as alternative activities to continue while you're not running.
Right, and that way that rest time or your time off running is time well spent, because there's nothing more frustrating than resting 3 or 4 weeks and then trying to resume running and not being able to do it. So if you're going to take some time off from that activity or cross train, you want to make sure that you're using that time very wisely to get appropriate muscles strengthened and stretched, so when you do hit the ground, you can hit the ground running.
Oh, very funny. Aren't you clever?
Well, if it's the left side, is it the right side that's the strengthening problem, or is it the left side?
It's probably the left side, but it also could be where he's running. So, Brian, where do you run? Because that's your, let's see, left side would be down leg. Is where do you run, on roads or do you run trails? What do you usually run?
Usually road, sidewalks.
Okay, so
could be the cant, the cant in the road, but you can't rule out asymmetry. We're all a little bit asymmetrical, and the question is whether or not that asymmetry is manifesting clinically.
Right.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And Judith in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Let me start out by saying I'm 75 years old. I'm very healthy. I have no medical problems. And I'm active. I don't have an exercise routine, but I have a big garden. I have a house to take care of, and I have two little preschool grandchildren that I do a lot of child care for. So I have had problems off and on with both my hips and my knees over the last year. And recently I went in to see my doctor because of a problem I was having with my left knee. And the difference between the way that felt than anything previous and what made me go to the doctor was I felt as though there were sensations from that knee going up and down my leg. So I went in to see him. What he said he found on the knee was a synovial hypertrophy. So a thickening around a part of that knee. Yeah. But he said he didn't have any answers for me about why there was something both up and down my leg where I was feeling not quite a numbness, but something like that, as if the whole leg was sort of swollen or wooden, you know, just a lack of sensation rather than a tingling or something like that. At any rate, he suggested an anti-inflammatory, and I went online then to see what the what was being said about meloxicam, and I didn't like the sound of it, so I never took that. But at my urging, he did suggest that I go in for physical therapy. So I'm really eager to do this. I want somebody to evaluate all of this. I don't know what kind of questions to ask. I don't know where to begin to find the right person who's going to be as knowledgeable as Jill and Lori are.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Yeah. I would look for an orthopedic clinical specialist.
An OCS.
OCS, yeah. So they, if you go, do they have them? Is that on the APTA website?
Yes, you do. Yes. If you go to www.APTA.org, that's the the American Physical Therapy Association website, and then in the search engine I would probably type in something like find a specialist.
Okay.
And it'll direct you to the page where it'll tell you what kind of specialist are you looking for, and you would want an orthopedic specialist. And then you can type in your zip code, or you can just type in Milwaukee, and then it'll spit out
the specialists
and their phone numbers and everything like that.
Then conversely, depending upon your insurance, I assume your Medicare.
Yes.
You could check out if there's an outpatient physical therapy clinic close to you. You could just call them and say, do you have an OCS, an orthopedic clinical specialist?
Okay. I'm very glad that you mentioned that, because, in fact, there is a hospital-related outpost three blocks away from us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I'd call them first.
Yeah.
Okay, but this is great, because I did not know what I was looking for, so I was hesitating about calling them. And with the little bit of information I've given you, can you suggest questions that I might ask or a direction I might talk about going in?
I think the important things are to let them know your goals. So you did a really good job telling us about your activity level. I think it's important to let them know what this is impeding you from doing. So what can't I do because of this?
Okay.
And those are kind of the important things. So the therapist understands what your goals are, what you want to get out of therapy.
Right, and particularly that you have this wooden feeling sensation, which is not a typical sensation associated with primary knee problems. So
right,
you want,
this is why I was alarmed about it.
Right. So I would want that person to have that information up front so they don't just focus on the knee. They're going to need to have a bigger look at you.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thanks so much for calling. And Cynthia in West Bend, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have extremely flat feet. And a couple of months ago, I was on somebody's vibrational max plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I injured my left heel, and I've been using ice and heat and foot baths and acupuncturist, and I started swimming, but I haven't been able to resume walking and stuff, and it doesn't seem like anything I do really alleviates that pressure that I'm feeling in my left heel.
Mm.
This started because you were standing on a vibration mat?
Yeah, it's one of those vibrational plates that you turn on and your foot goes side to side, up and down and everything, and it was set too high, and I believe that's probably what started it.
Okay.
And is it in both heels or one?
No, it's just in my left heel.
And were you standing on it with both feet?
Yes, I was.
Huh. So it doesn't just vibrate, but it actually moves you?
Yeah, this particular vibrational plate goes side to side, up and down, and things like that. It's called a max burner.
Okay. And what's it supposed to do?
It's supposed to help, like, with weight and things.
Oh, okay. I can't say what's causing it, but I would think at this point you need to go see somebody about this. If you've done all the things that you listed out when you first got on the line and you are not any better, you need to go see somebody to have them examine your feet and figure out what's wrong. You could possibly have a stress fracture.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh.
Yeah. I think you need to go see somebody.
Good luck.
Yeah, let us know how you turn out.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Nissenbaum, our guests today, they're going to be with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at your physical health today with physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill is Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at the UW. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And our lines are all filled. Let's take a call from Randy in Laval next. Randy, thanks for waiting. Randy, oops, first I better turn the volume up. There we go. Randy, are you there?
You bet, yeah. Hi, needless to say, love these two. They're very talented, and people that have called in and said they're not sure they can find someone as gifted. I share their worry.
Oh, bless you.
Anyway, listen, have a lifelong passion for now, at least continuing the rest of my life as being healthy and lean, and would like to keep my ankles and knees and everything in good health, and so I run every day. And at 65, take care of them, and am under the care of good physical therapists. But the last week I noticed, and so I thought I'd take advantage of your knowledge, I noticed my left ankle, I developed a little bit of an annoying pain. If you ran your little finger right from your second toe, not the pinky toe, but the next one up, right to the angle in your ankle, right there at a point. And I notice it's not as bad when I'm out running, but then when I put my street shoes on, this is my question. Do I need to now get, like, high-quality street shoes like my running shoes to avoid, say, an incorrect angle on my ankle the rest of the time when I'm not running?
Well, that's a great question. And, Randy, I think I know you, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
So, Randy came in and spoke to the physical therapy students after he had lost. How much weight had you lost, Randy?
I just was down to the doctor. I have a BMI now of 20, just a little under. under 22, and I had a BMI at one time of 48.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
hats off to you.
Randy's been a lifelong exerciser and very conscious of eating. And how long ago was that you lost all your weight, Randy?
25 years, and I could not have done it without physical therapy. It's too much damage to joints and things like that, and physical therapy really has helped me get back and stay back, you know. So
and so we want to keep Randy healthy.
Oh, yeah.
This is very important.
We need to.
So first of all, the first thing is, are your current running shoes in good form? Are they?
Yes, I keep a really good pair, and then just so I don't extend the use too long, I get another pair.
Perfect.
So I'm not tempted to use those too long.
Perfect. Okay, great. So you always have that. And then the question is, you had mentioned that you put on different shoes, and that's when your ankle hurts. Are these stiffer shoes? Are they more like dress shoes? Tell us a little bit about those shoes.
No, they're work shoes for around, you know, the farm. I, you know, farm and then duties around the farm. And that's when, you know, a few minutes will go by, and all of a sudden I notice that pain sort of is coming. So I'll think, do I need more arch in that shoe? What's wrong with that?
You could very well need that. I'm guessing, are they like steel-toed work boots with the
exactly.
shank?
They're the that kind of heavy yeah. shoe.
So I'm guessing that putting an off-the-shelf kind of arch support in that would probably be a really good place to start, because those are much stiffer, and they may be changing the way in which your foot is getting loaded. That's very different than your running shoes. So if you still want that steel-toed and you need a heavy shoe, I would start with those that you have, those work boots, and get a really good arch support that you can just buy it off the shelf. Superfeet work really well, and put those in those in your work boots and see if that makes a difference.
Yeah, I'll do that. The one thing you don't want to do ever, if you're, especially as you age, you don't want to take any risk with those joints, because they're necessary to keep exercising.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
That's exactly right.
You got it.
So I would start with that and see if that makes a difference, because that is a pretty big swing to go from a running shoe to a steel steel shank shoe.
Yeah.
Okay, well, nice to talk with you, and keep inspiring folks.
Yep.
To
go. Well, you keep inspiring folks. You're an inspiration.
And let us know how that arch support works for you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, Randy, for calling. Joan emailed to say that she's 62, had a complete ACL tear in early June. She's been in physical therapy since the beginning of July, has improved, but still has limitations, such as only being able to do stairs with both feet like a toddler would. Does there come a time when she would just give in and have the surgery? She wants to be able to golf next summer. I don't blame her.
Right.
Right, exactly.
And this is a tough question, because if she were 22 or 25 years old, we'd say, yes, go have your ACL reconstructed.
Yeah. They fall, the ACL tears results tend to fall into groups, and there are people who we call copers. Mm-hmm. And usually within the first few months, they recover, they don't have any episodes of instability, they're getting back to their activities, and they're doing well. But then the rest of the world are these, there's non-copers, and then there's a group who decides to give up whatever it was that they were doing, and so they get along without it. But it sounds to me as though Joan has been doing the things she's supposed to do, but is not back at the functional level that she'd like to be.
Right. And so if it kind of depends on what other structures were damaged in her knee. So if she had some degenerative changes in her meniscus may not be able to support her as much. And therefore, she's got kind of two issues going on. She's got some meniscus pathology, and now she has a torn ACL. You know, my gut tells me that she would probably be a good candidate for an ACL reconstruction, and she'd probably be the perfect candidate for an allograft.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because she has a relatively low demand knee. She's not mm-hmm. going to put a lot of demand on this knee afterwards, so she could use an allograft.
What's that?
So an allograft is, instead of using your patellar tendon or your hamstring tendon to create the new ligament, the new ACL, they actually use a cadaveric specimen. So, and there it's treated and everything. And the research shows that they may not be as perfect as we'd like them to be in higher level athletes. They may stretch out a little bit, things like that. But the surgery is basically, for lack of a better term, it's an arthroscopy, and then they just have to open up one of those portal incisions for about 10 or 12 millimeters, and they can route this graft through. So you don't have the donor site morbidity with it. It's very much patient selection and surgeon preference, but she might be a really good candidate for it because it'd be a less invasive, a shorter recovery time for that ACL reconstruction.
Right.
And the demand that she's asking her knee to do isn't that great.
Right. She's just going back to golf. If she's not downhill skiing or playing basketball or soccer, she can probably do well with that.
We had Julie on Facebook ask what kind of a pillow helps when with shoulder pain when sleeping on her side.
Oh, probably the kind of pillow that makes her sleep on her other side. you know, my preference in that case for people who really insist on wanting to be a side sleeper is a body pillow because you can do, it's called front side lying and back side lying with it. You're not lying directly on your side, but if you imagine a pillow, the length of your body, and you're on your side and you put it in front of you, you take your top arm and your top leg and you roll it over on top of that pillow. So you're not directly on your side, but you're halfway between your side and your front. Conversely, you can put it behind you and roll back and put that top arm across it and your top leg back over it. And that's called backside lying. And again, you're halfway between being on your side and being on your back. So you're not directly on that side, particularly if you have shoulder pain. That tends to be better. I don't think there's, unless you can come up with something, a specific pillow that you put under your head that will change that.
No, the only thing I'll tell people to try, the whole intent is you want your kind of cervical spine and everything to be in one line. So sometimes what I'll tell people to do is to roll a towel up and stick it in their pillowcase at the very bottom. So when they lie on their side, their neck is somewhat supported. Mm-hmm. So it'll help her neck, but I don't, if this is all assuming that her shoulder pain is coming more from her neck. So if it's truly shoulder pain,
if sleeping, it's truly shoulder pain, then it'd be the other.
Then sleeping on a body pillow would be better.
Yeah, so she's got those options.
Dan emailed to say thanks for talking about dry needling a few months ago. It's helped his back pain immensely. So thank you so much. Excellent. Mark in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling actually on behalf of my wife. She's 58, and she has some bunion issues with both feet. But actually, the foot that's less bunioned, or whatever the word is, her toe, the doctor said she had arthritis in her toe, and her large toe is very painful for her, but if you look at her feet, that's the straightest of the two feet.
Right.
My question is, I know my mother has had cortisone shots for her knee. She's quite a bit older than me. But is cortisone shots an option to try to help that arthritis in her toe?
You know, that's a good question. And people kind of underestimate the importance of that first MTP joint or metatarsophalangeal joint. It is so important for push off with walking, and you need about 70 degrees of range of motion to get that. And if you don't have that, then it completely changes your foot mechanics, your ankle mechanics, your knee, your hip, and can go all the way up the chain to cause back pain. So my suggestion would be, if she's lacking mobility at that first MTP joint, is there somewhere else very close by in her foot where we could steal motion? So I would suggest seeing a physical therapist that probably specializes in foot and ankle to see if there's some modifications they could do prior to jumping to an injection.
Sure. And Jill alluded to the mechanics of the foot. If the foot mechanics are such that it's causing her to increase her weight bearing out that MTP joint rather than out the end of her toe, sometimes an orthotic or change in her shoe in some way.
She wears orthotics already.
All right. So then, you know, again, seeing a physical therapist who specializes in foot and ankle, they can teach you how to do a great toe mobilization. Mm-hmm. You may be able to sneak a bit more motion out of that joint with some mobilization, just a little bit of distraction and mobilization of that joint. You may be able to get a little bit more motion and some pain relief with some mobilization of that toe.
If she's able to move that toe more, does that somewhat ameliorate the arthritis pain then?
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely, because if you imagine the toe having limited motion, then when she walks, all of her loading is on a very small portion of the joint. If she has a greater range of motion, then the load is distributed off over a greater portion of her joint surface. So with the limited motion, you have focal loading on a particular spot in the joint, and that overloads it, increases the arthritis, and increases pain.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Terry in Minocqua, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Good. Well, thanks for taking the call. I'm 49 years old. I had surgery in April, two meniscus repairs at the same time, and they were both repaired and not, I guess, meniscectomies, if that's
the right. That's the right word.
Right.
Well done.
Okay. They were going to be meniscectomies, but I before surgery, after talking with the doctor a bit, I did say, you know, obviously I have to defer to your expertise. If you feel like you can repair them when you're in there, I think, you know, I guess I've got to let you do your thing. And that's what happened. So he felt they were both in really, really good condition. And one I had injured about 3 years ago, and I think in soccer, and didn't have it repaired. And the other then in the last year became, I don't even know how I did it. But in any event, then I had MRIs, and they were both torn. And so we elected to do them both at the same time. I really didn't think I was going to have them repaired. I thought it would be a quick healing process. And I'm 5 months later now, and I have swelling every day. And I did see the doctor again for the first time in 2 months, or I hadn't seen him for 2 months, but I saw him last week, and he just felt that we needed more time because they were both done at the same time, and he had not done that many where you do two repairs at the same time. And so maybe it was just my body telling me I needed more time to heal. And so that's what we did. But in my visit last week, he felt like this was going to be my new norm. So is what he said. And I think he did a great job, but they're both swollen and one is still very painful. And I can't accept that as, he attributes it now to maybe arthritis. But prior to the surgery, he felt I had very little arthritis.
Okay.
Well, do you have any, are you having any fever, any redness, anything like that, or just swelling?
No.
Okay.
No, just swelling.
Okay. So you want to make sure there's no infection in there.
And do you have any compression garments on your knees throughout the day? Do you wear any compression on your knees?
I was trying that for a while, and I just really kind of stopped doing it. It did help a little bit, but just the ace bandages just became kind of a
They're
pain,
big. They're big and cumbersome. There's other options besides ace bandages. There's
IntelliSkin?
No. Oh. Keep talking.
Keep talking.
Talk
amongst yourselves.
TubaGrip. TubaGrip. Okay. There's TubaGrip, which is, it's kind of like putting on a pantyhose without a foot in it. And they're not nearly as tight as those things you wear postoperatively, but they're much, much easier to get on and off. You don't have to do the ace bandage. They're not nearly as thick, and they offer good compression. And are you still seeing a PT?
I have not been seeing a PT. I did not see one.
Hello. All right.
Yeah.
So did you have swelling? Did you have swelling before your surgery?
No.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. So see a PT, you know, have them look at your gait, have them examine your knee, have them look at your hip and quadricep strength. What kind of work do you do, may I ask?
I'm a salesperson, so, I'm active. You know, I walk a lot, but I don't, not physically, performing work every day.
Okay. Right. And do you notice any pattern to your swelling if you're sitting in the car versus walking more often?
Yeah, if I take a long car ride right now and I get out of the car, I have to kind of stand for 10 seconds before I try and walk because it's painful and stiff.
So you have a lot of swelling in there that's kind of pooling. Yeah. So you definitely need to see a physical therapist and get some compression on there. Sitting in the car, it's kind of a dependent position, so it's hard for all that swelling to come back up.
Yeah, but it you know, you should be recovering from this by now. You know, personally, I'd like to see you get in a pool for regular exercise because the hydrostatic pressure of the water mm-hmm. will help with swelling. Sometimes when you start exercising in the presence of that swelling, sometimes it can get a little worse. So I like the pool for that reason. But getting in and having someone look at it, look at your strength, look at your mobility, look at the joint, and follow you more than once every 2 months to get a better handle on this.
Right.
Because the swelling should be decreasing.
Right. And maybe some good manual therapy.
Some manual therapy, drainage. Some lymphatic stuff.
Exactly.
You could have a little lymphatic blockage in there as
right.
well.
Right. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Could rock it out.
Yeah. All right.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Leslie and Dale, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call and having this program.
Well, you're welcome. And what's on your mind?
I've got issues with my lower back. I'm 56 years old. I have enjoyed really, really good health and have been active all my life. And currently, my job is landscape design. So I do go with the crew and set up. So I do a lot of lifting plants and doing things like that. But I also work out on the elliptical trainer every day and do something physical on the weekend. So my life is very revolved around keeping in good shape. However, about a year ago, I injured my lower back. And prior to that, I was using a workout system called TRX. Are you guys familiar with that?
Yep.
Okay. I think, you know, for a long time I was using this particular exercise, these ropes, and I got to the point where I could be prone and do 15 min or 20 min's push-ups, and then after that, still prone, I did three sets of 15 crunchies. And I had to work myself up to that point, and it took me probably about a year to get it to myself that point. Then the first week of December last year, just before a trip I was going to take, my back just really started hurting, and it was mostly on the right side. I had pain going down my gluteus maximus on that side and then over to the side of my hip, and then coming on top where my quad was. It actually numbed my quad. It wasn't sciatic. It was the opposite on my quad. And I could, sitting and laying were very, very uncomfortable, and there's no way I could have laid on each side in bed. And this went on for about 10 months. Mm. And I finally have gotten to the point when my season started in March to be able to move around and be a little bit more functional. But I can't seem to heal it, and I've been trying to do this on my own, and by taking ibuprofen and trying to do, you know, I guess they call them supermans for strength exercises, but I'm lost.
All right, well, we're about a minute to go here, so let's see what we can do in a minute.
Okay, so why are you trying to do it on your own? I mean, you've been at it for
question.
A year. Okay. So then my recommendation would be to get some help because your symptoms, as you said, are not classic sciatic. You know, we were just tossing back and forth some ideas here while you were talking. Could be SI joint, could be lateral cutaneous nerve, could be a disc that's not a posterior disc. It could be a central disc that causes pain elsewhere. So you're healthy, you're vigorous, you're active, you want to stay active. You need to see somebody who can figure out the source of your pain so that you can get on the right path in your exercise program. Supermans may be great for some things, but horrible for some other things.
Right, exactly.
So you have not been successful in a year. It is time to get help from someone. And all, you know, it may just be a couple of visits to say, oh, this is what it is, this, 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 and this. And these are the things you need to be doing, but stay away from these for a while.
Right, absolutely.
So see your physical therapist.
Absolutely.
Yep.
It's worth it.
All right, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. And Lori and Jill, here we have so many things we could be talking about today.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We're out of time, though.
I know.
Yep. That's how it goes. But,
we'll be back on November 21st, and we'll do this again.
Yes. All right. After No. Halloween.
After Halloween, but before Thanksgiving.
But before Thanksgiving.
Just before Thanksgiving.
Yes. So we can give thanks for you, Larry. Yes. And thanks to all your great listeners wonderful questions.
Great questions.
Yeah.
Lori Tide Brody and Jill Tide Nissenbaum will be back on November 21st. Great to have them with us. Thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.